Time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dejon Hughes.
Welcome back into Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Good morning on this Saturday morning. It is time for me, Dejon Hughes, your host, to run you through another hour of what's happening in the state of Michigan in terms of sports and all the madness that is going down inside of the Mitten. This week, we're going to be talking about the Lions, what happened with them last week, how they're preparing for this week, and what it should look like for them this week, especially because they're in a bye week. So what is the things going to look like for them on the opposite side of the bye week? And we may talk a little bit about the NFC North as a whole, because with the Lions coming out of a bye week, there's only so much we can say about last week and in 2 weeks rather than this week. And then we're going to dive into Michigan and Michigan State, what they have going on across the college ranks. But don't forget about those Western Michigan Broncos. We're going to touch in on them and how they have been playing this season as well. Then we'll wrap things up with the Pistons and the Red Wings in our third segment as more professional sports get rolling in the Detroit area. Early season stuff for both of those teams, but they are looking pretty solid to start the season so far. Before we actually end our show with the picks, you know how it goes. Got to see if we know our ball or not. This weekend is going to be a fun weekend. Michigan State is going to be amazing. Packers and Steelers are going to bow off against each other in the NFL. Western and Michigan are playing each other in hockey. I mean, I'm loving it. The NBA's back. The NHL's back. Lacrosse signed its CBA for the professional league, so they will get their season going in the next month or so. So I personally and feeling great knowing that my nephew is going to be born soon. I got a new opportunity outside of work. Thanksgiving is coming up. It could not be a better weekend. So now let's talk about last weekend and what happened with the Detroit Lions. They did play Monday Night Football against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they didn't hold back against the Buccaneers. They were up 7-0 after one. They were up 14-3 at halftime. They were up 21-9 after the third quarter. Then they were able to get a field goal in the fourth, finish this thing out 24-9 in victory. So both the Buccaneers and the Lions are 5-2 on the year. The Lions remain a perfect 3-0 at home. The Buccaneers are 3-1 on the road now. Baker Mayfield had an uncharacteristic game, only goes for 228 on 28 of 50 in passing, one touchdown, one interception. Jared Goff, on the other hand, 241 yards, 20 of 29 for one TD and an interception. Rashad White had 38 rushing yards on 10 carries. Jahmyr Gibbs had his breakout game of the season, what we have been looking for from Gibbs so far this year. 136 rushing yards on 17 carries and two TDs. Kate Otten leads the Buccaneers in receiving with 65 yards on 7 receptions. As always, Amon-Ra St. Brown doing his thing. 6 receptions, 86 yards, and a tutty. Tyrus Wheat had 1.5 sacks for the Lions. Anthony Nelson had a sack for the Buccaneers. Tykee Smith goes for 13 tackles, 8 of them being solo. And Eric Hallett had 8 tackles, 6 of them solo, to lead the Lions. The Lions outgained the Buccaneers 379 to 251. They each had 2 turnovers in this game, 17 first downs in comparison to 15 in favor of the Lions. They each had 6 penalties, 35 yards for the Buccaneers, 50 yards for the Lions. Buccaneers go 4 for 16 on third down, while the Lions were 3 for 13. Bucks 2 for 5 on fourth, Lions 1 for 2. Lions 1 for 2 in the red zone, Bucks 0 for 1. As always, that red zone making a huge difference in this game. Looking at the scoring plays, Amon-Ra St. Brown got things going with a 27-yard touchdown reception from Jared Goff. Jahmyr Gibbs then burst off for a 78-yard touchdown run to start the second quarter. Chase McLaughlin knocks in a 53-yard field goal as time expires going into halftime. Tez Johnson responds coming out of halftime early in the third quarter. 22-yard touchdown reception from Baker Mayfield. They did fail in a two-point conversion, trying to make it a three-point game. Jahmyr Gibbs bounced back before the third quarter is over with another five-yard rush. And then Jake Bates gets a early field goal in the fourth quarter. And that was all the scoring we saw in this game. I mean, the Lions had their troubles throughout this game. Obviously, the Buccaneers had tons of trouble. But when you look at this game, getting 218 yards of offense from Jahmyr Gibbs alone, along with two touchdowns, it's going to help you beat just about anybody, especially in a game like this one where there was tons of lapses on both sides, an interception on both sides, a fumble loss on both sides, right? And then you also have the intermediate mistakes, six penalties apiece. That's tough. And then, you know, you're failing on 12 or 10 of your third down conversions. You're failing on some of your fourth down conversions. You didn't convert every time you were in the red zone. So when you're able to get a 78-yard touchdown rush from someone, it helps you tremendously in a game that you need to get something going offensively. The Lions did cash in on the 6.5-point spread. This game did cash in for the under on the 54.5, and then the Lions were that 290 favorite on the money line. There actually wasn't a single point in this game where they felt like the Buccaneers had a legitimate chance to win this game. The closest they got was 29.9% in the middle of the third quarter when they closed things up 9-14. Obviously, the Lions had some 80% stints in there, even some 90. Looks like their highest 92.8% before, obviously, the end of the game when they were at the 96, 98, 100%, that kind of thing. So Tampa Bay sitting at the top of their conference, 5-2. Right behind them is Carolina at 4-3. And then the NFC North is quite the conference at the moment. Obviously, Minnesota is sitting at the bottom with their 3-4 record. The only team in the conference that does not have a winning record at the moment. Chicago, 4-2, third place in the conference. But their games are interesting. I mean, they've scored 152 points, given up 155 points, but somehow are 4-2. Don't ask me how it makes sense, because it doesn't make any sense to me. If you can figure out how to explain it to me, by all means, spell it out for me, because I'm confusion. And then the Lions are at 5-2. And the only reason they're in second in the NFC North is because my beloved Green Bay Packers have a tie on the season to the Dallas Cowboys, which means, unfortunately, they don't have two losses, so they cannot be tied with the Lions. They're technically a half game above the Lions because of that tie. So Green Bay sits at the top of the NFC North at 4-1-1. The Lions are going into their bye week, which is huge for the Lions, because now they can kind of take a look at their depth chart and their injuries and see maybe who they could get back and who they can't. So looking at some of the recent things, they had Terrion Arnold, who was out on the 21st, Kirby Joseph out on the 21st, along with Avante Maddox and Sione Vaki. Zach Cunningham was out of practice Wednesday on the 22nd. Rock Ya-Sin is still questionable coming off of his game, off of the Monday Night Football game, along with Craig Reynolds. So there are some pieces here for the Lions to try and use this bye week to get healthy. But what I do know the Lions are doing in this bye week is they are promoting a work from home type of strategy. They don't want their players necessarily coming into the facility a ton. They want them to rest. They want them to enjoy their time with their family and friends. They want them to enjoy what a bye week truly is, while also stretching, eating healthy, recovering, lifting weights and plyometrics, all these kind of things at home on their own. Maybe they're going to get on Zoom calls with each other and that kind of thing, but they do not want them necessarily in the facility doing work over the bye week. They want them to truly rest. They understand the position they're in. You're 5-2. You're a half game behind the lead in your division, and you have a bunch of guys that are not healthy for X amount of reasons. And also, you just played 7 games straight. It's okay to take a week off and do virtually nothing. Obviously, they're not going to do absolutely nothing. They're going to be looking at their playbook. They're going to be looking at adjustments. They're going to be watching film. They're going to lift weights, do plyometrics, stretch, all of these things. But when you get to do it kind of within your own home, you get to do it within your own schedule, as long as you're getting the work done, that makes things a little bit easier on you. And then you're a little more motivated to do it in your own time. So I think the Lions are taking advantage of what a lot of teams should be doing. Let your guys spend their bye week the way it should be. Somewhat of a relaxation. You get to, you know, do your workouts, stay up to date, make sure you're fresh on the playbook and you're watching film. But at the same time, you can go out and enjoy a dinner with your family. You can go out and hang out with your friends that you haven't seen in a few months. You can call up your parents and maybe go out for tea. Who knows what it is you want to do with your bye week? But I think it's important mentally for the Lions to break out of this football mentality and be able to enjoy their bye week like they should be. So I think this philosophy is going to be great for the Lions. Coming out of the bye week, their next game is going to be against Minnesota. That's on Sunday, November 2nd, 1 p.m. game. We'll talk more about that next week after they come back for their bye week, and we'll see what both of those teams are looking like going into that game. But when we come back from the break, we got to talk some college football. We're going to start with an unlikely team, the Western Michigan Broncos, then dive into the Spartans before touching on the Wolverines. We'll be back with more Mid-Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Welcome back into Mid-Madness on 95.3 WBCK. It's time for us to talk about some college football. And before we get into the big names for the week, we got to talk about arguably the biggest name in the state, Western Michigan University. Their Broncos football team is looking fantastic so far. They're 3-0 in the MAC conference. They are 4-3 on the year. When you look at their season, they dropped a game to Michigan State. Then they lost to North Texas by 3. Then they got dominated by a top 10 in Illinois. That's normal for the beginning of the season. They played Toledo, win by 1 after a crazy game where they didn't score until the fourth quarter. They were able to score 2 touchdowns late in that game, take a victory. Took care of Rhode Island like it was nobody's business, 47-14. Bounced back the very next week on the road at UMass. Takes down the Minutemen, 21-3. And then they absolutely dominate Ball State, who was undefeated in MAC conference play coming into the game, 42-0 last week during their homecoming. Now it's time for them to go on the road. They have a huge test on the road for them this weekend. I mean, a huge matchup for them today. Later on, 3:30 p.m., they're going to be taking on the Miami of Ohio Redhawks, who are also 3-0 in the MAC. They're 4-3 on the year. So taking a look at their schedule and what they've been through so far, they lost 17-0 to Wisconsin. They lost 45-17 to Rutgers. They lost 41-38 to UNLV. They were able to take down Lindenwood, 38-0. Easy money for them. Northern Illinois, they took down 25-14. Were able to dominate Akron, 20-7. And then their most recent battle was against the Eagles from Eastern Michigan, who they beat 44-30. So they're coming into the year just like the Broncos. The only problem is, if you ask me, I think the Broncos are very much better than the Redhawks from Miami of Ohio. You didn't put up 6 points on Michigan State. Matter of fact, in 2 games against Big Ten opponents, you only put up 17 points. And it was against Rutgers, who's arguably at the bottom of the Big Ten. Meanwhile, at least the Broncos had a competitive game against Michigan State, then went down and almost beat North Texas, losing that game by 3. The Redhawks were nowhere near competitive, except really in that Wisconsin game and UNLV, but UNLV is not a top major program. So it's not a big deal to go out and beat or lose to UNLV by three. But I think these two teams are very, very, very similar. So this game is going to be insane. You got Brock Lowry, who leads this Western Michigan team on the offensive end as their quarterback. He's also their leading rusher. Talik Williams is their leading receiver. Nadeem Tucker and Safaya Sapaya Jr. are leading the defensive categories for the Broncos. Daquan Finn is much like Brock Lowry, not only their quarterback, but also their leading rusher. Cam Perry is their leading receiver. Adam Trick and Eli Blakely are going to lead things on the defensive end for the Redhawks. Both these teams are on four-game win streaks coming into this game. They're both 3-0. This game will be on ESPN+. It will be 3:30 p.m. from Oxford, Ohio at Jaeger Stadium. They're giving Miami, Ohio a 52.1% chance to win on the matchup predictor, just a 47.9% chance for Western. But the Miami Redhawks are only 1.5-point game or 1.5-point favorites. The over-under sits at 41.5, and they're negative 120 on the money line. But the Broncos are even, so this game is much closer than many think it probably should be. But I'm going to tell you, I have my trust in the Broncos, whether they're going on the road or not. I will be tuned in for this 3:30 p.m. game. Hopefully you are as well. I want the Broncos to continue having success that they've had this season. They're one of three undefeated teams at the top of the Mid-American Conference. The other one is Buffalo. So it's Buffalo, Miami, Ohio, and Western Michigan. One of these two teams out of this Western Miami, Ohio game will no longer be undefeated in that conference. We'll find out at the end of Saturday. Now that we've talked about Western, because I wanted to make sure I got them some love, let's talk about Michigan State. Another loss for the Michigan State Spartans. They ended up taking on Indiana last week, number three in the country. They lost 38-13, and it was not particularly close at any point in this game. Aiden Childs did return. He goes 27-33, 243 yards and a touchdown. He also had 48 rushing yards on 8 carries. Nick Marsh continues to be the best receiver, arguably in the Big Ten. 7 receptions, 64 yards, and a TD. And then Malcolm Bell at 7 tackles, 5 solo. They had no sacks, did the Spartans. Fernando Mendoza goes 24 of 28, 4 TDs for 332 yards. Kalon Black goes for 64 rushing yards on 10 carries and a TD. Omar Cooper Jr. had 115 receiving yards for 8 receptions and a touchdown. Stephen Daly, 2 sacks, and Lewis Moore goes for 11 tackles, 6 of them being solo. The Hoosiers outgained the Spartans 464-367. No turnovers in this game whatsoever. 24 first downs in comparison to 19 in favor of the Hoosiers. Only one penalty on the Hoosiers for 5 yards. Meanwhile, the Spartans had 6 for 46 yards, 5 conversions each on third down. The only problem is the Hoosiers only had 8 third downs that they were confronted with. Well, the Spartans had 14. The Spartans went 3-for-4 on fourth down, though, and then 1-for-2 were the Hoosiers. Neither one of these teams have a red zone percentage, which I find to be kind of weird. But Martin Connington, looking at the scoring plays, got things started for the Spartans with a field goal early in the first. And E.J. Williams Jr. had a 13-yard TD reception from Mendoza. Then the Hoosiers were up 7-3 at the end of one. Nick Marsh bounces back with a 15-yard reception from Aiden Childs to put the Spartans up 10-7. Elijah Surratt bounces back with a 24-yard touchdown reception from Fernando Mendoza, putting the Hoosiers back ahead. Then Kalon Black got everything really pushing as they went up 11 points after his 29-yard touchdown run. Omar Cooper Jr. comes back in the third quarter, 48-yard touchdown reception from Mendoza, putting them up 18. Then they went up 25 after Elijah Surratt caught a 27-yard touchdown reception from Mendoza. And then Nico Radicic goes 31-yard field goal to put them up 28, and Connington gets another field goal late in the fourth quarter, but that was about it. That's going to mark it at 38-13. The Spartans are on a current four-game losing streak. They've lost so far to USC, Nebraska, UCLA, and Indiana, so they are 0-4 in the Big Ten, along with Penn State, Rutgers, Purdue, and Wisconsin. Then you have the middle of the pack teams, such as Maryland, who's trying to fight at that 1-3. And then you have Washington and Nebraska, Illinois, who are all 2-2, and a slew of teams standing at 3-1. Oregon, Northwestern, USC, Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, and UCLA. And then Ohio State and Indiana are sitting atop of the conference, not only undefeated in conference play, but undefeated on the season, 4-0 and a perfect 7-0 on the season. So before we even talk about the upcoming game this week, let's talk about Michigan's win last week over the Huskies from Washington. They were able to bottle Damon Williams Jr. They had him to 209 rushing yards or passing yards, 20 of 32, but he threw three interceptions. Mr. Jonah Coleman goes for 16 carries, 50 rushing yards, and a touchdown. Denzel Boston had four receptions for 71 yards. Ty Uangale goes for one sack, and Mikel Easton had eight tackles. All of them were solo. Bryce Underwood, 21 to 27, 230 in the passing yards, two tutties through the air. Jordan Marshall had a game on the ground, 133 rushing yards, 25 carries, and a TD. Zach Marshall goes for 72 receiving yards on five receptions and a touchdown. Derek Moore had two sacks, and Jimmy Roller, who had not only an interception, but eight tackles, five of them being solo. Three turnovers really spelling the mark here and why this game went the way it was. 24-7 in favor of the Wolverines. Andrew Marsh started the game with a 22-yard touchdown reception for Bryce Underwood. Jonah Coleman bounces back with his touchdown to tie things up. Jordan Marshall goes for a 14-yard touchdown run. Zach Marshall gets his 10-yard touchdown reception at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And then Dominic Zavada punches in a field goal late in the fourth to put us up 24-7. And that was the victory for the Wolverines at Ann Arbor, or at Michigan Stadium in Ann Arbor. Now that we got through last week, let's talk about this week. It is rivalry week for the Michigan Wolverines. Well, I guess more so the Michigan State Spartans, but we're not going to act like this isn't a rivalry for the Wolverines. They just don't care about it as much as they care about Ohio State. So what's happening this weekend? The Michigan Wolverines are traveling to East Lansing to take on the Spartans at Spartan Stadium. Michigan has an 87.8% chance to win this game. Just a 12.2% chance for Michigan State. Michigan opens the game at 14.5-point favorites. It now is a 47.5 over under and a negative 700 on the money line for Michigan, plus 450 for the Spartans. As we know, Michigan is 4-1 in their last five. Opposite side for the Spartans, they're 1-4 in their last five, but they do think that this game could help them get back on track. They believe that this game could be the one that helps the Spartans rejuvenate the energy in their locker room, rejuvenate the energy in their season, and get going in a positive manner toward, you know, a bowl game possibly, because they do already have three wins, so you only need to win three more. But the question is, can they do that? I don't know if they're going to get a win against the number 25 ranked Wolverines. I think the Wolverines have been far better, and there's a possibility Justice Haynes returns for this game. If Haynes is able to go, you're in trouble. I'll just say that right now, because that backfield is going to be insane. This game will be on WBCK. Also, will be on NBC and Peacock. 7:30 p.m. is going to be that kickoff. We won't talk too much more about this game because we'll pick it later during our picks. But when we come back from the break, we're talking Detroit Pistons and Detroit Red Wings as more pops off in Detroit. We've got more Mid Madness coming to you after the break on 95.3 WBCK.
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Mitten Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back into Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Time to talk about the Pistons and the Red Wings. We have a little less to talk about with the Pistons as they are just getting started on their season. But what I can say is their season started on a disappointment. They lost to the Chicago Bulls. They let Nick Vucevic go for 28 points on 11 of 18, two free throws. He also had 14 rebounds, 10 of them being defensive, four offensive. Josh Giddey went for 11 assists. Cade Cunningham had a game, though, 23 points and 11 assists, only three turnovers in 34 minutes. Isaiah Stewart led the Pistons in rebounds. They both shot 44%. The Bulls were a little bit better at 36.7% in comparison to 29.2% from the three-point line. 18 turnovers for the Bulls, while just 10 for the Pistons. Rebound battle goes to the Bulls by number of 50 to 46. But, I mean, this game was back and forth in the beginning, and then the Bulls started to separate in the second and third quarters, and then the Pistons came grinding back in the late third, early fourth quarter to try and make this a game, which they were able to do. They just couldn't come out on top at the United Center. They ended up losing 115 to 111 in the early start as Metelis Bazulis goes for 21 points after they blew a 23-point lead. They were just able to outlast the Pistons. Coming up, though, in their next game, which was technically last night as you're listening to this, as you know, I record on Friday during the day, they took on the Houston Rockets. The Rockets are also 0-1 after they lost their opener against the Thunder in a double overtime game where they saw Alperen Sengun go for almost 40 points, and then they saw Kevin Durant go for 23 in his first game with them. Caris LeVert is a game-time decision. Marcus Sasser is a game-time decision. Jaden Ivey is still out for the time being. Fred VanVleet out. Dorian Finney-Smith is out. Jayshon Tate and Isaiah Crawford are both game-time decisions for the Rockets. As both these teams are coming off of losses, close losses at that, they'll both be looking to bounce back. The Rockets have a 69.1% chance to win the game at home. Meanwhile, they're giving the Pistons a 30.9% chance to come out with an upset in that game. 6.5-point favorites are the Houston Rockets. 227.5 sits on that over under. Negative 250 for the Rockets, but that plus 210 for the Pistons looks fantastic. Looking at the rest of their schedule and what they have coming up, not only just this weekend, but kind of into the next week, they got the Boston Celtics on Sunday at 3:30 p.m. Then they're going to have the Cleveland Cavaliers Monday, October 27th. Wednesday, they pull the Orlando Magic. And Saturday, November 1st, they have the Dallas Mavericks. All of those games are going to be home games technically. So Cleveland, Orlando, and Boston will all be at Little Caesars Arena. Meanwhile, the Pistons will get to be the home team when they take on Dallas on Saturday, November 1st, but it will be played at a neutral location. Both the Cleveland game on Monday and the Dallas game on Saturday will be on Peacock, as the NBA continues to branch out on where they're playing their games in terms of streaming sites. But a tough uphill battle for the Pistons to start the year. Obviously, you drop your game to the Bulls, who were not a playoff team last year, but then you go on to play Houston, a playoff team, Boston, a playoff team, Cleveland, a playoff team, Orlando, just missed out on the playoffs last year, Dallas, a playoff team, Memphis, just missed out on the playoffs, Utah, a playoff team, Brooklyn missed out, Philadelphia missed out, Washington missed out, Chicago missed out, Philadelphia missed out. So then you have about a 4 or 5 game stretch before you go back to play Indiana, who also made the playoffs. So if the Pistons are able to have some success in this early run, the rest of the season may look a little bit better than some people may think, especially when you're able to run into a situation like Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Washington, Chicago, Philadelphia. Those are teams that are near your skill or worse than you, that you are better than because they didn't make the playoffs last year. You can win those games like you should, and then win a few extra to add on to that, you're going to be in a phenomenal space, and you could even be higher than that sixth seed that the Pistons had last year. But it's a very early season, so we'll talk much more about the Pistons as their season continues to draw on. But at the moment, we can just relax and see what they have for us in the next couple of weeks. And now, let's talk about a team that has gotten things rolling so far this year. The Red Wings. They came off their first loss of the year to the Canadiens 5-1 and rattled off five straight wins. They beat the Maple Leafs 6-3, then turned around and beat the Maple Leafs again 3-2 in a home-and-home type series. Then they played the Lightning, beat them 2-1, and then they beat the Oilers 4-2. Now, they did just drop two games in a row. On the road, though. So far this year, when we're looking at their record, they're 4-1 at home, and they're 1-2 on the road. Looks like they're absolutely fantastic to me. Looks like they've been playing good hockey to me. And I don't know, maybe let's count up how many goals they've scored this year. 1, 7, 10, 14, 16, 20, 24 goals already. And they've only given up, team, 18, 25. They're in great shape. 24 goals in comparison to the 25 that they have given up. That's exactly where you want to be. You're 5-3 on the year, second in the Atlantic Division, and the goaltending has been phenomenal. Phenomenal. I mean, they've, like I said, given up 25 goals on 212 shots, which means they have 187 saves already. Their goal against average is 3.13, but their save percentage is sitting at 0.882. They're playing phenomenal on that side of the ball. Looking at the skaters, team leaders, points, who do we expect it to be other than Captain Dylan Larkin? Yeah, I thought so too. He's got 13 points to lead the team. He's got 6 goals, 7 assists, and his plus-minus is 8 on the year. Leading in penalty minutes is center Mason Appleton with 12 so far this year. But, I mean, you know what to expect. DeBrincat has 7 points. Lucas Raymond has 6. Patrick Kane has 5. Appleton's got 4 on the year. Rasmussen pouring in 2 points on the year. Sherratt has 2 points as well. Moritz Seider getting in on the action with 2 points. A few guys leading this team in terms of points. But looking at how the season has started for the Red Wings so far, they're in phenomenal shape for where they're going. They have a game later tonight as well, 7 p.m. on ESPN+. You're going to be taking on the St. Louis Blues, who are 3-3 and 1 on the year. They're 2-0 on the road, though. This is a game at Little Caesars Arena for the Red Wings. They're 5-3-0, 4-1-0 on the year at home. Jake Neighbors leads the Blues in points, 5 points, 4 goals, 1 assist. And then Pavel Buchnevich leads them in assists. He's got 4 assists, 1 power play, a 6. Alexei Toropechenko is day-to-day along with Milan Lucic, and Zach Dean is on the IR for the Blues. Patrick Kane is day-to-day, while Shai Bayham and Nate Danielson are on the IR for the Red Wings. St. Louis only giving up 2.86 goals, or goals for, they're only scoring 2.86 goals, giving up 3.86. The Red Wings are at 3-3.13. Obviously, I'm going to take the Red Wings to win, but we'll talk more about the Red Wings next week. We're about to get into our picks after the break with more Mid-Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
WBCK.
Welcome back into Mid-Madness on 95.3 WBCK. It's time for us to get into our picks. Before we end this thing on out, before we even drop into our picks for this week, we're going to talk about the season overall and how I'm doing. Last week, your boy went 5-1. You take a while to guess who my one loss was. It was the trust I had in the state of Michigan. Trinidad Chambliss came up just short against the Georgia Bulldogs. So Ole Miss is my one loss last week. Bama, Notre Dame, Vandy, BYU, and the Lions all won their games last week, giving me a 5-1 record, giving me 35-19 going into this week of the season. We have four football games, three of them happening in the college football ranks, one of them going down in the NFL, and then we'll be also getting in the Octagon today as well. You can get in on our action with the picks using the app on WBCK. All you have to do is submit your picks. Once I run through the lineup of games, I make my picks. Use the chat feature on the WBCK app. Let us know what your picks are and see how you measure up against me. You think you know ball? You think you know ball better than me? Well, put it up to the test. Use that chat feature in the WBCK app. Put in your picks and see how well you are able to do. Now, let's jump into the Octagon to start things off this week. UFC 321 is going down later today. The main card is at 2 p.m. Actually, the prelims just started. ESPN Plus, Disney Plus, FX at 10 a.m. Main card will be a pay-per-view. We'll start with the co-main event, which is a women's strawweight title fight between Verna Jandaroba and Mackenzie Dern. Jandaroba, 22-3-0. She's 5'3", 116 pounds, 37 years old, 64 inches of on the reach. She's an orthodox fighter who lands almost 60% of her significant strikes. Meanwhile, Mackenzie Dern is 5'4", 116 pounds as well, coming in at 32 years old, 63 inches on the reach. She's an orthodox fighter as well, and she lands 53.14% of her significant strikes. When we're looking at the fighting odds, it's a negative 155 plus 130. On the money line, it's Mackenzie Dern, negative 155. Jandaroba, plus 130. They do expect this fight to go over 4.5 rounds, as it's negative 135 for that. They don't the distance of this is weird, because the no is negative 110. The yes is negative 120. But they just said they were expecting to go over 4.5 rounds. I don't know. That's weird, but if I'm not mistaken, I believe that Mackenzie Dern and Jandaroba have already fought against each other, but I am looking that up just to be sure. This is great podcasting, by the way. Yeah, they have fought before, and Mackenzie Dern did come out on top. They said it's water under the bridge, though, and they're looking for this title fight to be significant. So I'll be excited to see how that shapes out. But what I will say is I'm going to be in favor of Mackenzie Dern here. I think she's an absolute rock star, but I do think Jandaroba will give her more than just a fight. So I am going to rock with Mackenzie Dern taking on Jandaroba. Now, for our second fight in the Octagon, it's going to be the main event. The main event is going to be Tom Aspinall versus Ciryl Gane. Now, as we know, Ciryl Gane has been fantastic in his time as a UFC fighter, but also so has Aspinall. Aspinall has been unreal. Before we talk anything about them and their histories, Aspinall is 15-3-0 in his career. Ciryl Gane is 13-2-0 in his career. Aspinall, 6'5", 251, 32 years old, 78 inches on the reach. Orthodox fighter that lands 58.53% of his significant strikes. Ciryl Gane, 6'4", 245, 35 years old, 81 inches on the reach. Orthodox fighting stance as well, who would land 63.2% of his significant strikes. Looking at our fighting odds, negative 400 on the money line for Aspinall, plus 300 for Gane. They are expecting this to go over half a round. Shocking that is at negative 600. Under half a round is even. The fight going a distance is a plus 450. They are not expecting it to go a distance, as it's a negative 800. This is in the Abu Dhabi Etihad Arena, as this fight will be going down. If I'm going to be honest here, before I even make my pick, I want to make sure that they have not fought each other before, because let me tell you, that would completely change my opinion on how this goes. This will be their first fight, And I'm going to be honest, as much as I love Ciryl Gane and the way he fights, Tom Aspinall has been at a different level over the last about year and a half or so. I'm going to rock with Aspinall to continue to retain his title, but I would not be shocked in the slightest to see Ciryl Gane take that title from him and end up on top. Now it's time for us to get on to the gridiron. The Green Bay Packers are going on the road this weekend to take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Green Bay Packers 4-1-1. They're 1-1-1 on the road. Meanwhile, the Pittsburgh Steelers are 4-2. They're 2-1 at home. This game will be played at Acushnet Stadium in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It is an 8:20 p.m. Sunday night tomorrow, which means it's going to be here on BCK as well, also on NBC and Peacock for your viewing pleasure. 54.1% chance for the Packers to come out on top. 45.6% chance for the Steelers. This is, I believe, the first time Aaron Rodgers will be facing the Packers since he left the Packers. Jordan Love, Josh Jacobs, Tucker Kraft, and company will look to give Nick Herbig, Patrick Queen, and the rest of that Steelers defense a problem, while Rashawn Gary and Quay Walker will be looking to give Aaron Rodgers, Jaylen Warren, DK Metcalf, and the rest of that Steelers offense quite the issues. As we know, McManus is questionable. Christian Watson is on the PUP. Josh Jacobs, questionable. Dattavian Wicks, questionable. And all offensive tackle Zach Tom, questionable as well. For the Steelers, Scotty Miller and Zach Frazier are both questionable. Will Howard, Miles Killebrew, and Malik Harrison are all on the IR. The Steelers coming off a loss. The Packers haven't lost since, I guess, their technical tie against Dallas, and then obviously the week before against Cleveland. Two losses for the Steelers coming at the hands of the Bengals and the Seahawks. The Packers have wins over Washington, Cincinnati, and Arizona. I'm not going to take that Cincinnati loss with a grain of salt with the Steelers, because that is a divisional game. But I am going to lean with my Packers because I have a lot of trust in my boys. But Aaron does know that system very well. So we'll see what happens with this game. But if you thought I was going to pick against my Packers because I missed Jacob, you're crazy. My Packers are winning this weekend, and I can't wait to talk some smack with Jacob about it, because, as you know, I'm a big Packers fan. So now that we're through the NFL, it's time for us to talk some college football. The Ole Miss Rebels, who are 6-1 after their loss last week in the SEC to Georgia, will take on the Oklahoma Sooners. They're 2-1 in the SEC, 6-1 on the year. This is a noon kickoff on ABC from Norman, Oklahoma at Memorial Stadium. Trinidad Chambliss versus John Mateer, Kawan Lacey versus Troy Blaylock, Harrison Wallace III versus Isaiah Stegna III. This game is shaping up the exact way it should. They both are 4-1 in their last five. The one loss for Ole Miss is at the hands of Georgia. The one loss for Oklahoma is at the hands of Texas in the Red River rivalry, which is obviously a little shaky. They both have big wins. They both have close wins. If you think I'm going to go against Ole Miss again just because they lost to Georgia, you're crazy. I don't care what that 44.7% chance says. The Oklahoma Sooners are only 5.5-point favorites. They're only 195 on the money line, plus 165 for those Ole Miss Rebels. Over-under sits at 51.5. So, yes, I'm going to rock with Trinidad Chambliss again because I believe in the kids from the state of Michigan, and I'm going to pick Ole Miss to take down Oklahoma in a tough SEC battle. Speaking of the SEC, the 15-ranked Missouri Tigers, 6-1, 2-1 in the SEC. They're traveling to Nashville, Tennessee at First Bank Stadium to take on the 10th-ranked Vanderbilt Commodores. They're 6-1 of the year, 2-1 in the SEC. Vanderbilt, 3.5-point favorites, -145 on the money line, plus 125 for the Missouri Tigers. 53.5 sits on that over-under. Bo Perbula versus Diego Pavia. Diego Pavia, also their leading rusher, against Ahmad Hardy. Kevin Coleman Jr. against Eli Stowers. This is going to be a matchup full of points. There's a reason that 53.5 is sitting at the over-under. As we know, they're both 4-1 in their last five games. They both lost to Alabama. Missouri lost 27-24. Alabama or Vandy lost 30-14. But the difference is Missouri was at home. Vanderbilt was at Alabama. To me, that makes a world of a difference. Missouri beat South Carolina 29-20. Vanderbilt beat South Carolina 31-7. If you think I'm going against Diego Pavia and how well the Vanderbilt Commodores have played as the 10th ranked team in the country, you are nuts, because I'm taking Vandy to win this game as well. So you know what that means? That gets us into our last game of the weekend. It's going down right here in the state of Michigan. It's also going to be right here on WBCK. The 25th ranked Michigan Wolverines, 5-2 on the year, 3-1 in the Big Ten, traveling up to Spartan Stadium in East Lansing, Michigan to take on those Michigan State Spartans. 3-4 in the Big Ten, or 3-4 in the year, 0-4 in the Big Ten. They are 7:30 p.m. kickoff on NBC. As we know, we talked a ton about these two teams. We know their leaders on both sides. We know what these teams are trying to do. We know that Michigan is a 14.5-point favorite, and we know that pretty much everybody's expecting the Wolverines to just dog walk the Spartans. I'm not one of those people. I think this game may be a little closer than some other people think, because Michigan State always comes out to play. But, of course, I'm not taking the Spartans over my Wolverines. So that gives me Michigan, Ole Miss, Vandy, the Packers, Aspinall, and Mackenzie Dern for my picks this week. Coming up later today on WBCK, we have the Michigan game on at 7:30 p.m. Pregame starts at 6:30. And then tomorrow we have the Packers and the Steelers for Sunday Night Football. And then on Monday, we will be playing the Commanders and Chiefs right here on WBCK. I hope you have an amazing weekend, because I'm going to be doing the same with all the sports. And we'll be back next week with more Mid-Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.